What is up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm one of your hosts, King Cash, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
Good to be here.
Hey, joined as always by our great and lovely producer, DJ M. We actually have some sports news to talk about in light of all the things that have been going on. We've been talking about how sports have been mostly shut down due to the outbreak and the spread of the coronavirus. As we were starting to get over that, we now have civil disarrest, I guess I'll call it, going on as protests over the George Floyd death and other kind of police brutality and issues kind of ring out across the country, which is now also putting a hampering on some sports things picking back up. But in light of all that, we do have news to give.
Yeah, we'll get into all that stuff later, but MMA has still been going on. Mm-hmm. Amanda Nunes retained her UFC featherweight title versus Felicia Spencer last night. With a pretty dominant five round decision. This marks her 11th straight win, and she's now the first title holder, or first two division title holder in all of the UFC to defend both titles successfully. She's also got the UFC bantamweight title. It doesn't look like anybody's going to come close to challenging her for that. And then now the featherweight title as well. She's put a stranglehold on that. So she is now she was the top of two divisions, and she successfully defended her place at the top of the mountain in both divisions. And doesn't seem like anybody's anywhere close to her at this point.
At this point in her career, right, are we just kind of I don't know how to put this, but like it's just that she is the best at what she does.
Yeah, and I think we've said before, like if you look at the list of fighters she's beaten, it's like basically an entire who's who of the history of women's mixed martial arts. So now, you know, like all those people that she beat, like they're all retired now. She's probably the one that retired most of them. Yeah. And so now she is the new gold standard, and she is a pretty high standard, and it's going to be a while before somebody beats her. But once that happens, you'll know that person definitely earned it, because that's kind of how things work when you've got a dominant champion like that. It's at the point where she's talking about taking a break for this year, which I mean isn't a bad idea with all the COVID stuff happening. But it's also a sign that like you don't have a whole lot of challengers that are ready, because once you do, then everybody's clamoring to see that fight, and it becomes really lucrative to have those fights that everybody wants to see. But at this point, when you're that much better than everybody else, it's kind of hard to come up with a challenger at this point, because she's just dispatched all of them.
I think in this field, it kind of becomes a literal wait and see, right? You kind of want to wait and let the field play out and let people kind of come up in a sense, right? You don't want somebody to win one or two somewhat noticeable fights and then everybody be like, well, now you should challenge Amanda Nunes, right? You kind of want them to go through the gamut, right? You want to see if they really have the chops, if they can beat this person, if they can beat that person, if they can beat, you know, like all these other people. And then you almost turn Amanda Nunes into a raid boss, right? You got to go through all these stages before you
got to fill up the dragon belt first before you can challenge for the dragon star. Except she's got two dragon stars, and so it's going to be a while before we see another challenger be able to take her on.
All right, so. With that being said, right, and if the possibility of Amanda Nunes retiring, what do you think we see first?
I wouldn't call it retiring, because
I'm sorry.
This is like Conor McGregor supposedly retired again, but like,
yeah,
so Conor McGregor takes like 2 year breaks. He doesn't really retire.
And that's what I was gonna say, right? What do we see first? Is Amanda Nunes's break end first, or Conor McGregor find someone to fight?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna.
And I'm not talking about just in the ring.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure I'll fight somebody outside of the ring first, but it's, it's really weird because he announced that he was retiring from quote unquote fighting. And I think when he said that, he meant like, okay, I'm not going to box and I'm not going to do mixed martial arts professionally. I think he was vague about the term fighting because he wanted to say like he's not doing either one of those things. But the rest of us, when this news broke while we were playing board games, we were like, well, does that mean he's going to retire from fighting in a ring or fighting in the streets? Because he definitely does both of that. Yeah.
But as DJM put it, it's also kind of retiring, in a sense, for some people is a negotiation tactic, right? Yeah. It's I'm your moneymaker and I feel like you're not offering me what I want. So I'm going to stop, you know what I mean? Like I'm going to stop making you money. And people kind of have done this in MMA before, Dana White kind of fancies himself this like really great businessman and stuff like that. And I mean, he's done some great things for the UFC, but I think it kind of harbors these kind of tactics when you kind of put people on a pedestal in a certain sense. So they kind of find ways to use media or certain kind of things as avenues of negotiation tactics that normally wouldn't be. So this definitely, like Conor McGregor going to boxing is a negotiation tactic against the UFC, right? Like, yeah, he's still going to make money boxing, but it's also like, hey, like they're offering me this and I can take it. And now you have to offer me something else to bring me back, right? Like, yeah, so it's all these things that kind of come together in a weird way.
Yeah, athletes in team sports can, if they are, they can threaten to play for another team. That's always a negotiation tactic that they have available. You can't really do that in an individual sport because you are your own team, and so you, the only negotiation path you have left is to use the fact that you would probably have more fun just not fighting at all versus getting paid just less amount of money to fight. Yeah.
Right. And
the idea that the UFC will lose more from Conor McGregor not being around than if they were to just pay him the amount of money that he wants. I don't know if that's necessarily true, considering he's been doing this game for several years, and so. I think everybody's kind of gotten used to the MMA world without Conor McGregor around, with him just popping up and doing something dumb every once in a while. I mean,
very much kind of akin to Brock Lesnar, right? Like the UFC and the WWE kind of roll out Brock Lesnar every like once in a blue moon kind of thing in this weird way. And you know, Conor McGregor could go that route.
Yeah. And yeah, we're like almost more than 5 years removed from Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey being the faces of the UFC. And you know, and now we're past that. We're used to them not being around, and I mean everything's fine. I don't know if they're probably not making as much money as they used to back when they had those big draws, but it's still like a healthy competition. There are still people that got into the sport because those people inspired them to, and eventually those people will turn into the champions that can carry the sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Amanda Nunes already has. They just don't market her to the same degree that they did Ronda Rousey. But, you know, I think overall the sport itself is pretty healthy. So
yeah, no, I agree. I think it's in a really good place. And I'm kind of getting to the point where I'm excited to see UFC fights again. So hopefully that continues. Hopefully they keep putting out a good product, and we'll just see where it goes from there. Speaking of products and finally putting something out, the NBA has finally kind of nailed down their idea for returning to regular basketball. So you have this article in here from ESPN, and right now what we're looking at is a 22-team plan approved by the NBA owners and the players. Regular season continues for 8 games. You're going to have 8 games, and then the 9th seed, if they can win 4 games of the 8th seed.
If they're within 4 games of the 8th
seed. If they're within 4 games. Okay. Within 4
currently
games.
Currently, they're at 3. In the West, the gap is 3.5 right now. There's 3 teams that are effectively tied for the 9th seed, although Portland has a slight edge because they played a few more games. If they are within 4 games, then I guess the NBA has decided that since this is a slightly shorter season, you don't know what would have happened during those last 8 games that are missing or so. If after playing these games, there's still like a small gap and not a big gap, then the 8th and 9th seed go into a playoff where they play each other.
Okay. But the eighth so that's seed the 2-game play-in.
Yeah. But there has to be some advantage to the 8th seed. So the advantage is they just have to win 1 game out of those 2. The 9th seed has to win both. It's like a tiny double elimination playoff. And that's only if there's a small gap between the two, between the 8th and 9th seed in each conference. So in the Eastern Conference, the gap is 5.5 right now. So the Wizards, which are the only team in the East that were invited back, they have to make up a couple games versus Orlando, and so if they manage to do that, then they can challenge Orlando directly. Same thing in the West with Memphis being the incumbent 8th seed. Not a perfect plan. It's probably a little more convoluted than
there is some confusion in here, and I think I think this is the best they could do with what they're trying to do. This does seem to leave a lot of things up in the air and a lot of what ifs, but I think right now they're doing the best with what they've been given. It's really weird. I think we just kind of have to go with it. You know, I think at this point, fans alike just kind of have to go with this.
It was a 29-1 vote for for approving this, and the one dissenting vote was the Blazers, who are actually part of this, they just wanted one of the more creative 20-team plans, and so they just chose to vote against this one, everybody kind of rubber stamped it just because it's like, all right, we've been waiting, like we have an idea now, and everybody seems to be at least mostly okay with it. So let's just go.
I think this is kind of the most of a lot of the ones that we've looked at that were either leaked or put out kind of in a weird sense for review. I think this one just kind of gets the ball rolling, in essentially, right? This one is like, we go, we play games. There's kind of an instant lockdown of how these things are going to happen so that we could really just kind of get out of this season. And I think that's kind of what most people want at this point. They just kind of want to get out of this season, right? The season isn't going to be one that really goes down in the history books. It's going to have a lot of weirdness around it. And I think people just kind of want to get it done in a sense. So the season is going to be resuming on July 31st. The last possible NBA finals date is right now October 12th. So yeah, it's I think some of these other plans that we showed and that we talked about seemed better to me as a fan, but I think I
love the World Cup plan, but
yeah, yeah.
But this is the one that requires like the least amount of adjustment. Maybe that's not necessarily true. I think just cut it off at 16 teams now and start the playoffs with the 16 we have. I think that's probably the simplest one. But then this is the one that achieves the, you know, get 8 more games in so everybody can hit their 70 game threshold. And you know, there's a couple $100 million that they're going to get from just doing that part of it. And then the play-in part is the only other major adjustment. That even the schedule itself, they're just going to continue with the schedule as where we left off for the next 8 games. So when they hit one of those teams that hasn't been invited back, they're just going to skip that game and move to the next one.
Weird.
It's weird, but at least they don't have to write a whole new schedule. They do have to figure out what the hell they're going to do with the last couple games, because there's some teams where I think it's like the Lakers and some other really good team that is scheduled to play the Kings for their last game. Like both of them, but the Kings will have already played 8 games by then. They still have to figure out what to do there. And it'll probably be something weird, something convoluted, but they'll come up with something.
And that's why I kind of liked the World Cup thing in the way you presented it, because it was like you almost, in a sense, create a mini season and you kind of start with a clean slate by taking people at their best record right now and throwing them into the groups and then creating these single game eliminations and move up and move downs or doing the group stage thing where everybody kind of plays each other. You get enough good basketball out there, but I think that also then gets into a weird place with TV contracts, because everyone's going to want to see that, right? Like one of the best things about the World Cup is that you can watch every single game. Some of them you have to wake up at the crack of dawn, depending on where it's happening. But like that's kind of the fun in that, right? And also, a lot of those games during the World Cup are going on at the same time, and like basketball's sometimes weird about like that shit. They only like to have like 3 or 4 games a night. I don't know.
I think this is going to be like a nice fun thing while like everybody's working from home, mm-hmm. where you can kind of like, all right, you wake up at 9 and you turn on the TV and there's basketball just all day nonstop from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and
yeah,
you know, one game finishes, then take 30 minutes to move everybody out and then bring the next 2 teams in and as we mentioned last time, this will be at the Wide World of Sports complex in Orlando, near Disney World. So they're gonna kind of have their nice little isolated bubble. DJ mentions that this is gonna mess up the Pistons' chance of getting the number one pick, because like basically the worst, I believe 8 teams that have not been invited back, their lottery odds are effectively locked where they are. So the NBA has given some thought about how to handle the draft lottery and everything else that's dependent on the standings. And so they've decided that they're going to do the lottery odds based off of the standings as it exists now, except they will shift people out of the lottery if they make the playoffs. The Pistons currently are at the 5th slot, with a 10% chance of the number one overall pick. The Knicks are in 6th with a 9% chance.
God, yeah, we'll talk about the Knicks later.
But the Kings are back.
So going over to the other side, the WNBA is also considering a 22-game season that would start in July. Is it a very kind of similar plan that they're looking at
It's similar in the sense that they're talking about like just finding a place, which is basically what every other league is doing. Just find a place where they can play all the games. Mm-hmm. Their season is supposed to be happening right now. Was supposed to have started basically at roughly the same time the outbreak started. So that's not true, because the college basketball season was supposed to end at around the time the outbreak started. But summer is the time for WNBA basketball, and so now the NBA is encroaching on that, and every other sport is encroaching on that, and so they have to go and find a place to play while everybody else is trying to find a place to play too. So
yeah.
So that kind of sucks for them. And but at the same time, I think it would be nice if the NBA kind of incorporated the WNBA along with it. I know they're technically part of the same organization, but it would be nice to have like WNBA games sprinkled in throughout the day along with NBA games.
Yeah.
So that if you are one of those people like me that's just going to sit down and watch basketball all day, then you get to see both. And so I think that would be helpful to the WNBA to be sprinkled in along with NBA games. But I don't know if they're going to get that creative with it.
No, they won't. it's kind of, there's that weird thing that they still a kind of inclusive, exclusive kind of thing with the WNBA and the NBA. All right, let's talk a little bit about baseball. So we've been talking about baseball's work to come back. They've also been throwing out some weird ideas and things like that. But kind of the further we go in the baseball talks, the more counterproductive they seem to become, and the more angry both sides, the players and the owners, seem to be coming at each other. So right now, the owners have rejected a counterproposal from the players of a 114-game season. And it just looks like we're not going to really get anywhere. It looks like we might be heading for and this is where the dramatic music comes in, shutdown at this point. Because I don't see... We're at that heading where kind of both sides feel like they shouldn't back down. And when you kind of get to those points, people start throwing out things that they know are going to be rejected. People start saying and doing things that are going to antagonize the other side, to try to kind of sway something in some weird way that's not going to happen. And unless somebody kind of comes in as a mediator, and kind of broker some kind of deal between the two sides, it's going to end up in a place where baseball is going to be shut down, not due to COVID or protest, but because people can't agree on how they want to work together.
Yeah. It's been a while mm-hmm. since we've had a work stoppage in any of the major sports, hasn't it? I think the last one was the NHL.
But you know, they love to roll that shit out like a fucking like hockey is quick with that. They're like they will roll that out in a heartbeat.
I think 7 years ago, I think, was the last NBA work stoppage where they had a partial season due to a lockout. I think I specifically remember that because that's when the Kings were their first relocation saga. So it might be like 7 years, maybe like 10 years or so. But
so the last one, kind of according to the internet, was 98 for the 2011 for the NBA.
For the NBA. And then 98 was the one after that. That was after the Bulls dynasty collapsed. And then
we had an NHL lockout 2012, an NHL lockout in 2004, and then one in 94. Oh, yeah, then there was an NFL lockout in 2011. I do remember that. So yeah, but hockey is the kings of doing this. So.
Yeah, and I think the NFL one, I don't think that one actually disrupted the season. I think they figured everything out before it would have resulted in a change in the schedule. But everybody was looking at 2021. December 1st, 2021 is when the current collective bargaining agreement is over. And then everybody saw that like both sides were pretty far apart when it came to negotiations about whether to renew and how to proceed forward. And so this is kind of, COVID kind of gave them an opportunity to have that fight a little bit early and over other things. And it's still, it's pretty clear at this point that they can't even agree on how to resume or how to start the baseball season this year with a shortened season, and who deserves and who gets what percentage of whatever revenue they can scrape out of this. The players, the players are taking prorated salaries, but they want to play 114 games instead of 81 games, and then how much do the players have to take on the burden of the fans not being inside the stadiums and paying for tickets? They're nowhere close to an agreement on that. And I think if they manage to get something together, I still think that resentment is gonna lead into the 2021 negotiations as well. I think there will be some bad blood from that, and it will. Yeah, we could be seeing a strike. We could be seeing we'll see some sort of work stoppage in 2021, unless there is a massive amount of common ground that is reached. But it doesn't look like that'll be the case yet. I'm not even confident we'll get a 2020 season at this point. Mm-hmm. I think they wanted to start July 4th, but. Yeah, doesn't look like that'll be the case. They're definitely missing on that. Like, if we get a season, it might end up being like a 50-game season, which is weird because at least one example that I'm seeing is that the Washington Nationals last year were terrible in the first 50 games, and they went on to win the World Series. So I don't know if 50 games is a good enough sample size for anything, unless you drastically expand the playoffs. So we'll have to wait and see. And it seems like both sides in baseball are content to wait and see rather than reach out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm fine with a work stoppage for baseball at this point because nothing good is happening over there anyway. yeah, I don't know. I've been having strong feelings about baseball and Witten kind of everything.
I was excited. I wanted to boo the Astros. And,
nobody got that Astros boo tour.
Yeah, and that got cut off.
I'm fully engaged with the Tigers and the process, so I was ready for another high draft pick. So, yeah, I'm unhappy about this too.
All right.
Yeah,
you're losing all your draft picks this year, aren't you?
Well, I mean, somebody has to draft those players out of it, but.
Oh, no, I just meant the city of Detroit is losing all their draft potential at this point.
Yeah, I know, right? Remember at the year in review special when I talked about how bad all four teams were? Now, thanks to the world ending, we can't even get our high draft picks anymore.
That's rough.
Somehow, some way, Detroit still comes out on bottom. all right.
Damn shame.
Speaking of sports and sports personalities, let's talk about what sports personalities have been doing in the wake of all the protests going on. Some have been doing good, I guess. Some have been doing kind of the quintessential hold the camera up to their face. I can't believe this is happening. Yada yada, sad times, donation to X charity, come together right now, post on their preferred platforms. But going from there, we have seen things like a bunch of NFL players kind of getting together and putting out a video to the league to talk to the league kind of in a very public facing way about their racial inequality things, their right to protest and do other things, and just kind of bringing up a lot of grievances that black players and people have been having in working with and working for the NFL.
Yeah, it was a 70-second video organized by a lot of stars, so it includes like, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Saquon Barkley, DeAndre Hopkins, just to name a few. But like, these are big, high-profile NFL stars that are speaking out about this, and I think one of the clear themes from the video is like, you know, these are people that see themselves as like they identify with the people that are being brutalized by the police. Like they see themselves in those people. You know, just them saying like, you know, I am George Floyd. Like that could have very well been me out there getting murdered by a cop, rather than, you know, just a regular normal person. If you're gonna look at us and see us as stars and see us as important people, like keep in mind that, you know, this could just as easily happen to us too. It could just as easily happen to you. It can happen to anybody. And for right now, that's happening, you know, more to black people than it is to anybody else. But that's covering that and the fact that they're disappointed with the NFL and the way that they've kind of suppressed that in the past and suppressed their ability to speak out on that in the past. And I think this was kind of one of the first times that we've seen the stars of the NFL, especially the black stars, like all get together and release something that just was a complete shot across the bow for the NFL. And, you know, kind of forced them to say something about this because this was such a very high profile message at the right time to, you know, at the time where all these NFL teams are posting, you know, Blackout Tuesday, all these, you know, trying to participate in all this. And then the NFL stars come out and say, all right, if you guys are as serious about this as you say you are, here is everything that you've failed us on in the past. So what do you have to say about that? And, you know, and then Roger Goodell recorded his own video to respond to that. And I think his video, just in a vacuum, if you ignore all of the Colin Kaepernick undertones, I think
because I'm gonna bring it up.
Yeah, no, we are. If you ignore all that, I think this was a statement that did address all the concerns that were brought up in the video. It, you know, included an apology from the NFL for not taking this as seriously as they should have before, and for suppressing the players' ability to speak out. That's the kind of thing that the NFL normally would never admit to. But I think because this was such a strong statement from the players, the NFL basically had no choice but to say, yeah, we fucked up on this. And,
all right,
and
it's let me pretty ask you clear. Something. Yeah. Let me ask you guys something, because I said on our last episode that to me, Roger Goodell is a press secretary more than having any real position of power.
Yeah, he works for the owners.
He is the fall guy for the owners. Do you genuinely feel right now in 2020 that the NFL owners, all 32 owners, and say what you want about the owners in the NFL, they are who they are. Do you really think that they've come to an understanding on what the players in the league are trying to make clear? Do you really think that they genuinely get it now? And this statement that they had Roger Goodell put out on their behalf is genuine. Mm-hmm. Do you think so?
Before you even said that, I was gonna kind of equate it to this, right? It's either save face or good faith, right? And I have, especially when it comes to things like this, I've never seen the NFL do things in the latter category, which is good faith, right? Everything they do is to save face all of the time, right? It's, there's no other way for us to look good unless we save face, is kind of the thing they always rely on, right? And right now, unless there is very instantaneous change as they go from here, right? Because right now I'm taking this as saving face, right? Because that's all I know them to do. Going from here, you either make very equivocal, very, very fast change, and things like Colin Kaepernick actually getting a viable shot at a job happens because they go, hey, in good faith, we have done wrong by this person in the past, and we need to now go back and make this a good faith thing. What's going to happen is this is going to be a save face thing, and as soon as they get an opportunity to once again continue to demonize Colin Kaepernick, they will take it at the first opportunity, is how I view this.
I think what they're seeing now is that public opinion is shifting on Colin Kaepernick. We're seeing a lot more people coming out and saying, like, oh, this is what he was talking about this entire time. And it never was about the flag. It never was about the military and all these things that we've been trying to say all along. But like this is like more people are coming around to it. And before you've had all these owners that were concerned about, you know, the PR implications of trying to sign Colin Kaepernick because he's a quote unquote controversial player, even though they're perfectly willing to sign domestic abusers and other people that have actually committed crimes. They were so concerned about the PR impact. I think there would be less of a PR impact now, or it would be less of a controversial signing to go out and sign him now. And I think that makes them more likely to do this. I think you're right. Like they're reading the tea leaves. They're seeing the winds change in public opinion, so they want to, you know, put up their sails and go along with that flow. But like you also said, I never really expected them to, or I mean, I don't expect better out of them than that. So I guess I don't know. I'm kind of just half happy that it's happening, but also. But also still really cynical about it. And the only way get less cynical about it is to see 4 or 5 years from now that this actually mattered and wasn't just lip service.
I'm reading something, guys, from Pro Football Talk, that says a report from Mike Florio that the owners, most owners were, quote, taken by surprise by the video that Roger Goodell put out. I guess per the report, I'm just reading it from Pro Football Talk, Goodell gave a few heads up to some of the owners after he decided to make the video and put it out, but generally it's looking like the owners, most of them, were not privy to Goodell's statement at the time.
And when you say that he cleared it with a couple of the owners, I think that's probably like, you know, the Maras, the Rooneys, the old guard, Jerry Jones, Robert Kraft, those guys, and It did. It was a very quick response, and it was a very quick response, and overall, it was a pretty well put together response. But I mean, it definitely seemed like it didn't go through the corporate PR ringer, because that would have taken like a week for all teams to approve and ratify this statement. And so, like, I'm glad he did.
Can we throw something in there about how we care about our military?
So, like, it definitely felt like a more, I guess, heartfelt would be the right word. I was thinking honest, but, like, not really honest. But, like, it was a very clear, like, okay, we totally recognize we fucked up on this. And it was pretty clear from that. If you can get anything from a short video like that, it seemed pretty clear that at least a little bit more sincere than the normal NFL PR statement. It doesn't surprise me that they kind of bypassed the entire process of that they would normally go through. But I think also to bring Colin Kaepernick back into the discussion, he was not mentioned at all in the statement. And I think part of that is like a legal thing. Like nobody, and you'll see this with like any company, you don't admit wrongdoing to anything because it leaves you liable to a lawsuit. So if they were to come out and say, "We are sorry, Colin Kaepernick, you got completely screwed over by this. We fucked up and you lost a lot of money because of it," then that's potentially grounds for a lawsuit, which they did partially settle, but to come out and publicly say that, I think they wanted to avoid that. That avoidance is part of what makes this statement look a little bit less sincere, because the one person that is the biggest symbol of somebody getting their voice suppressed by this is Colin Kaepernick, and so his omission in all this is just a big glaring red flag. It's a mixed bag. I don't know, I'm kind of torn between wanting to be happy with the effort, but also more of just like, this is, they're better than they were last week and the week before that, but still questioning how much they've really changed, and I think that's what it's going to require throughout all this. You don't want to be so cynical that you reject anything that looks like any attempt at progress, but at the same time, unless you remain skeptical from this point on, it becomes, you can't hold the league accountable if you just assume that they have good faith every single time they do something like this. You got to hold their feet to the fire, and you got to constantly hold their feet to the fire. That's what the players did when they released this video. They put the league on blast in a way that the league hasn't been put on blast in an organized way before, at least among high profile players. It forced a response out of them, and it forced a response out of them that we were not accustomed to seeing. It made them scramble, and it made them bypass the process of getting everybody's approval and all that. It's progress. I'm not in a position where I can speak on whether it's good enough, because I'm not one of those people that gets constantly harassed by the police. It's something, but we got to keep working forward. Drew Brees.
Yeah, let's get to the speaking of things. And we all kind of have our thoughts on this, as has everyone in the world. So Drew Brees made some statements that I think for the most part, you could go and watch the interview and see what he said. But kind of the rundown was he was talking about how he mostly agrees with all the things that have been going on. He disagrees with kind of the looting and rioting. And, you know, that's a here or there on how you feel about those things. And then he got to the flag. And this always becomes this weird point of contention when people talk about the flag and what it equates to them and all these kind of things. And he equated it to, once again, the military and his family fighting for freedom and all this stuff, which is just, it's very echo chambery. It's very, like, it's very weird and specific, and I don't understand it, is kind of the thing I'll come to. I guess in my growing up, that thing has always kind of just been a thing. It doesn't necessarily represent anything wholeheartedly good or bad to me. I don't get the overadverted symbolism of the flag that these people tend to hold on to. And maybe because, you know, being a black male and even my friends who are black and of the military, even when those things try to get ingrained into them in that military kind of thing, they don't hold on to that. So I don't know if it's just something that as a black person, we don't get. But I just don't have that. I don't hold on to this fucking thing about the flag.
It's different for different people. Like, I've always looked at it as like the son of immigrants in this country. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always looked at it as like this is an ideal, but like also, you know, like during the anthem, it's a time to reflect on different things. And part of what I choose to reflect on is that like this is an ideal, but we're not there yet, but this is what we're working towards. Mm-hmm. So like that's what the symbolism means to me. But all of this, like in the context of this overall discussion with the protest, it's like the flag becomes a straw man that people that want to diminish protests during the anthem, you can just label that as you're disrespecting the flag by choosing to speak out during that time, even though speaking out is a very American thing. It's a very it's in the First Amendment. It becomes a thing people grasp at, and so Drew Brees did the same thing that so many other people did when Colin Kaepernick first kneeled, that so many people have continued to do since then, to be so willfully obtuse about what he was protesting for, and to think that this was in any way disrespecting the flag, especially considering how much work Colin Kaepernick went through to talk with members of the military and revise the way he was protesting to do it in a way that he felt was more respectful, or at least would help take away those concerns about whether this was disrespecting the flag or not, and not that he ever meant that to begin with. The kneeling itself, the gesture of kneeling, was something that he and Nate Boyer came up with. Who is a military veteran, and that kneeling symbol is now a part of all of this. You see it in all the protests before. You see the police department taking knees with the protesters, and then, you know, waiting an hour and tear gassing them later. But the taking a knee itself has become a symbol in all this. And that wasn't something Colin Kaepernick came up with to begin with. He just sat on the bench during the anthem and people didn't notice for a couple of weeks. Until somebody asked him about it. And then he continued to do that and then revised it later. But like the knee is supposed to be a sign of respect. But everybody that tried to diminish his protest tried to turn it into a sign of disrespect. And that's what Drew Brees did here. Whether intentionally or not, he parroted the same bullshit that everybody else parroted for so many years. And I think we've seen a lot of people, white people especially, that have taken the last couple of weeks and taken a look at themselves and learned about all the bullshit that's been happening. And
one of my big proponents of anything with anyone is I try to be a very open person, and I always say, like, education will teach you everything. And in that, what I mean is actually educating yourself in certain aspects by talking to people and learning things that have happened to people and why they have happened to people. A lot of that shit is very well documented.
You just have to look.
Yeah, you just have to look. And you have to be willing to listen. You have to be willing to listen, learn, and understand. And that's kind of one of the big proponents a lot of people are talking about. And I love that right now, right? It's not being an echo chamber on necessarily either side. There are a lot of people out there who are pushing the thing of listen, learn, and understand, right? Because that is the only way. Yeah.
There is something that I've been seeing with all of this that I can honestly say I've really never seen before, including when Colin Kaepernick first took a knee. And that is just the number of white players and coaches, for that matter, that have really, for the first time, truly began to listen to black players and other black people in America. I've seen Kyle Shanahan, Dan Orlovsky, Frank Ragnow, the center for the Lions, a number of white players in multiple sports, in fact, have been saying for the first time that I can ever recall, okay, we understand that we really don't understand what black people and what black athletes have to go through and what they have to fear. And this is the first time I've really seen this that part where I'm seeing more white NFL players and more white pro athletes taking a stand and listening to grievances is something that I have not seen before.
Also, I want to get your thoughts because like I said, I have a lot of friends and family members, you included, who have done military service. And for me, when I've asked some of my other friends and family, they don't have that kind of thing that I guess for the most part, white kids who go into the military go into and come out with this like real gung-ho thing about the flag and all that shit. Yeah. Like they don't that one thing never crosses that barrier.
Well, it's because they have a different perception of America than we do. It's been said for a while now, there are two Americas. But to bring it back to sports just for a little bit, I know that Colin Kaepernick spoke with veterans about a way that he could protest respectfully. That was a big part of it. And mm-hmm. I've heard so many times, and this goes back to the divide you've seen, Kaz, where black veterans, myself included, have said many, many times, I served to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that includes freedom of speech. And it is Colin Kaepernick's right to protest. It is anybody's right to protest. That is part of the Constitution. And if that's what we enlisted to protect and serve, then, and I say this, and I've seen other veterans say this, that's what I enlisted with the idea to protect, Colin Kaepernick's right to protest. And I've always been okay with it. Yeah. And I know many veterans like myself have said the same thing.
The other wrinkle to this is Drew Brees saying like, oh, my grandfather or my people in my family fought for this country. And now you've got a lot of black people saying, well, so did mine. And for you to try to bring up your ancestors as to say that this is disrespectful to those people. Well, it's, our ancestors fought in those same wars. Don't forget that. And we don't see it as disrespectful. We see it as fighting for the things that we fought for. So it's, in a way, on top of trying to misconstrue the purpose of these protests, it's also a way that kind of erases the contributions of so many black soldiers in the past, to think that they don't have an opinion to, and to think that only the white soldiers were the ones that, just to think of America as just such a country only of white people, only of white soldiers, only of white leaders and white heroes.
That's probably what they do, with the sole exception of maybe Martin Luther King.
Yeah, and there's been plenty of discussion of how much he was demonized at the time before everybody's lionized him since then. Mm-hmm. Drew Brees kind of became a flashpoint for all this. Because if you are to actually look at the stuff that he said since then, he kind of came out with a half-ass apology. And then, a couple days later, he came out with, so it's like you just said in the chat, like the entire world let Drew Brees know he fucked up, including the city of New Orleans, where he is lionized. And
I'm going to do something even crazier here, and I'm actually going to give Drew Brees a little bit of credit for his apology.
I'm headed there.
Because he did what I said a second ago. He, as a white player, did something truly unprecedented and actually listened to his black teammates and let them speak and hear what they had to say and how unhappy they were with his statements.
Yeah, in a way, Drew Brees is symbolic of the transition that a lot of white people have gone through this past couple weeks. It's like half of me wants to say you're a little late to the party, but at the other half says welcome.
I'm
glad you're here. And he's gone, and he's had to go through this very publicly, and him and his wife, and you can see the progression in their social media posts. You see him start with parroting all the bullshit that has been traditionally parroted for the last several years, to, okay, we know we fucked up, but we still don't quite get it, to, okay, we've talked with a lot of people. We've actually taken the time to talk with a lot of people, not just talk, but listen. And this is what we think we've learned from it. And then on top of that, you see, so much of conservative media trying to turn this into a cancel culture / one of those situations where, like, every time somebody does something that fucks up, they get on their horse and ride into battle to protect the person who said these awful things. And Drew Brees is going to be fine. Like, he's still a football player, and people forgive football players for a lot of things. And he said something.
Nobody is going to take Drew Brees' Super Bowl ring away.
Nobody's going to take his job away.
He's not going to be a Hall of Famer. Right.
People in New Orleans are chanting fuck Drew Brees right now, but the first touchdown pass he throws again, everybody's going to be cheering for him again. He's going to be fine. He's got PR people. He's he's not losing his job. He's not.
His teammates seem to be. His teammates seem to be saying that he's come around on it, and he's mostly done the right thing after his first statement.
Everybody's disappointed with him at the same time, so it sounds like a very loud thing, but everybody's just disappointed. Nobody's going to go bring a mob to his house. It's fine. He's fine. Yeah. And everybody that does this gets the opportunity to go on a redemption tour. And Drew Brees is taking full advantage of that. And he's leaning into it harder than most people do when they do that.
I think part of that is the time in which the turnaround happened, right?
Yeah.
He made that statement. People told him he fucked up. He didn't, you know, and then rather than doubling down, he did the thing that we said, right? He listened.
Yeah.
And then he was like, well, okay, so where, you know what I mean? And he asked questions. And I think for the most part, that's literally what a lot of people would just like, is just fucking ask a question, man. Like, just somewhere, some way, try to understand and meet people halfway, and just try to understand and listen to them for a second, and learn from their experiences, and figure out that thing, you know? Because it's one of those things that has kind of been ringing out, where people keep talking about, like, they're you know, if it's not the military, it's then children, right? And people talk about how their children shouldn't have to hear or see these things or whatever. And, you know, all the other, especially people of color and not just black people, go, no, these are the conversations we have to have with our children all of the time.
Yeah, otherwise they're going to learn it the hard way.
Right.
You know, from people mistreating them. And
yeah.
Traditionally white people they perk up anytime you mention privilege, but at least I think the last couple of weeks, I think that's a concept that I feel for the most part, from a lot of the people that I've seen, they are diving really heavily into that and learning about what that actually means to them and what advantages they actually have. Which then brings me to my next story about the Sacramento Kings and their announcer, Grant Napier, who has done none of that. And the Sacramento Kings are going to rejoin the playoff race. They're going to rejoin the season. Grant Napier is not going to be with them because he was fired by KHTK, the radio station that employs him, and the Sacramento, and he resigned from the Sacramento Kings and NBC Sports as the team's lead TV play-by-play broadcaster. He's been with the team for 35 years or so. The entire time he's been a notorious asshole, as somebody who used to listen to KHTK growing up and still do occasionally. He's got a radio show every day from 3 to 6, all racial stuff aside, he usually spends his show yelling at callers, and demeaning them, and he very much knows who butters his bread when it comes to team ownership. Back when the Kings were about to pick up and leave town for Anaheim, he regularly criticized the city of Sacramento and talked about how they didn't deserve the team and they haven't done enough to keep the team, this and that, in Sacramento, because if they were to move, they would take him with them. And but then a couple years later, when it became the Kings have sold to a different ownership group in Seattle, he would not have gone with them. So at that point, he did his about face and, you know, became rah-rah Sacramento, this city is great, etc. And so he, you know, he is very self-interested with the way he goes about things. That comes to players as well. When you see who he does and doesn't criticize, it's who the ownership wants to criticize. And it's become very clear once Grant Napier turns on a player, that's a sign that ownership has turned on the player. Once the player eventually gets traded or whatever, Grant Napier is the first one to go on the radio and talk about how, you know, that person was terrible and how the team is much better off without them. So that is all 35 years worth of context leading up until this point. DeMarcus Cousins was one of those players that he roasted heavily. Somewhere in the middle of all this, DeMarcus Cousins just sends a random tweet to Grant Napier saying, "Hey, Grant, what do you feel about Black Lives Matters?" And then Grant Napier gave the textbook All Lives Matters response that so many people have figured out over the last couple of weeks is not acceptable anymore. And then on top of that, he doubled down and he did the textbook Black friends response that I have more Black friends than white, this and that. And then blaming that
now,
he
JVZ,
had.
We're going to, I'm going to put you on the spot here for this one.
Yeah.
You mentioned DeMarcus Cousins sending him that tweet. Boogie Cousins has not been in Sacramento for a few years now, but he reached out to Grant Napier with this tweet. Do you think that DeMarcus Cousins did this with intent to set him up?
I certainly think DeMarcus Cousins is surprised at how far it went. I think he did this as like a flippant thing. Like one that he didn't think anything would come of this, but he just did it to fire a shot at somebody that he has beef with. And not just DeMarcus Cousins, but plenty of other former players, plenty of other former Black players. The thought before this was that Grant Napier is somewhat untouchable. He's been kind of an institution with the Kings for a long time. He's a very good play-by-play guy. If you've seen any highlight clip of the Kings and you hear somebody saying, "If you don't like that, you don't like NBA basketball," that's him. That's his catchphrase. That's something that he was known for, and he has that reputation as just a very good broadcaster, because most people don't hear him on the radio every day and hear what a raging fucking asshole he is. So behind the scenes, I don't know enough behind the scenes to know how much of a racial undertone that he's taken with any of his comments. You see a lot of people saying like, "Oh, I don't know if Grant Napier is a racist or not. Like, I haven't seen anything in my time around the team to indicate that he is." And I don't know. I always cringe at stuff like that, because to me, racism isn't a binary thing. It's not you are a racist or you are not a racist. That everybody who's racist, go line up over there. Everybody who's not racist, go line up on the other side. Like it's a continuum and we all exhibit things in different spots on that continuum at different times in our lives. And we're seeing a lot of white people move in one direction right now, while Grant Napier chose, in his words, to stay stuck where he was. And this comes at a time where the Kings have tried to position themselves on the forefront of progressive causes. Last year, when Stephon Clark was shot, there were two games that were effectively shut down by protesters. And instead of hemming and hawing about the amount of lost revenue from all the refunds they had to give out, like, the team embraced the cause and leaned into it. And but meanwhile, one of the loudest voices in the organization, the one that everybody thinks as a de facto mouthpiece of the organization, decided to come out and parrot all the bullshit things that everybody has figured out over the last couple of weeks is bullshit. It runs completely counter to the message that the team was trying to send. The one time that he chose to not be in lockstep with the team's messaging was when asked about whether it's okay for black people to be shot by the police or not. So it was if you want to chalk it up and call it a mistake, it was a pretty glaring mistake. It's a pretty unforgivable mistake at this time. It shows that he is not willing to learn like so many other people have. And you know, for him to come out and say like, oh, I didn't realize that all lives matters is a phrase that people use to demean the Black Lives Matters movement. Like, where the fuck have you been for the last however many years? Like, it's just not acceptable at this point. And if it was just that, I think that there's a path to redemption from there. But, you know, but from him doubling down after that, from his history of comments related to the Colin Kaepernick protests, from trying to go full on stick to sports with all that, and you know, from back with the Donald Sterling saga, he didn't quite defend Donald Sterling, but he tried to diminish how Donald Sterling's reputation of racism, and tried to pull the whole like, well, he's hired a black general manager, he's got a black coach, he couldn't be that racist. But you know, we're all learning that this is a lot more complicated than that. And but Grant Napier didn't seem ready to learn all of that. But you know, now he's lost his job, and so maybe he's a little more willing to learn about that than he was before. All right, so that's my team. let's move on to Kaz's team. The New York Knicks and James Dolan, who I think while a lot of other teams have come out and done their customary posts regarding this whole situation, the New York Knicks didn't. But that didn't stop them from sending an internal memo explaining why they weren't doing that, which is kind of weird. A weird way to play this.
I think I can nail this down really quickly, right? Is I don't necessarily think James Dolan is racist in any way. I think his problem is he thinks he could get away with playing both sides of the fence while making a dollar. Because none of his statements are necessarily, or none of the statements he approves, let's put it that way, are bad. They're just very much, hey, you know, there's some shit going on, but I don't want to rock the boat. You know what I mean? Like that's how any of these statements that he made to the Knicks organization reads. There is also the thing in here about having the Rockettes perform at Donald Trump's inauguration or something like that. And that also reads as a, I don't want to rock the boat kind of thing. Right. He just kind of wants to lie low and wait for this shit to blow past and still be able to earn a profit and turn a dollar. And it's just very weak-willed. It's very kind of just sad. And I still doesn't take me away from the fact that I think the man's a goddamn idiot. But this he's still trying to hold on to this demeanor of being a businessman in the times where shit like that just doesn't matter. And it makes you look worse. It just makes you look worse. And I really feel like somebody in his PR team just needs to tell him that, like, this just makes you look worse. Like, Yeah. Either gotta stand on one side or the other in at a certain point, because if it really comes down to it, if he can, like, I think nothing less than the players literally just either all demanding trades or all just leaving, just literally up and leaving, is going to get this kid to understand. There isn't anything that's going to make him feel like he has to listen and learn and do any of those things that we talked about, any of the other people doing, unless he starts to literally lose money, right? That will be the point where he goes, oh shit, wait, what's happening and why? Because right now he feels like he can just fly under the radar, still be buddy-buddy with everybody, and not really have to have a thought one way or the other that isn't, at the end of the day, making a dollar for one of his brands.
Yeah, it's... I think we've seen a lot of people on social media kind of nitpick different corporate statements that have come out. Rightfully so, because, you know, sometimes you see a company put out a statement and it's like, well, your company is also, you know, financially they've donated to this cause and this cause and this cause, and they've done nothing towards this cause. In fact, you've donated to things that are counter to that. Mm-hmm. You know, or things like, you know, the Washington football team, you know, putting out, you know, doing their Blackout Tuesday post, and it's like, you know, your own name, your own team name is racist. So it kind of rings hollow from you, coming from you. And so, yeah, I mean, it's part of this whole discussion of, like, you know, how much do these teams really care? But it's, you know, with the case of James Dolan, not only did they not put out anything publicly internally, which, if you're going to take the time to write an internal statement, you might as well just make an external one as well. Because this is like a couple paragraphs talking about how, you know, it's a couple paragraphs of him trying to play both sides of the fence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, it's not that hard to come out with a statement against police brutality. It's not that, I mean, so much focus has been put on just the three words Black Lives Matters and how controversial just those three simple words were, when they shouldn't have been controversial in the first place. Just saying that the lives of Black people matter was just so hard for so many people. And we're still seeing companies hem and haw about that and just being afraid to even say that, and to, you know, because they're worried about pissing off the cops or worried about pissing off other groups or, mm-hmm. or whatever. And, you know, and it took public opinion swinging for so many of these companies to not be afraid to do that anymore. And yeah, it seems like James Dolan was, you know, more afraid of that than a lot of other teams. You can question how much it helps to put out a statement like that, whether it helps move the needle at all. But, you know, sometimes people in the community like to see that the team, even if it's just a statement, is showing some form of solidarity. But to actually show your work when it comes to how much you are trying not to do that, that on its own is a bit of a statement. And, you know, and it's a pretty weak statement. No controversy can slide by without the Knicks somehow participating and somehow putting their foot in their mouths. Even when it's in the act of trying not to say anything.
I don't know. I still don't like the man. I understand what he's trying to do. I don't agree with it, but at the same time, I just think he's an idiot. So I don't know. There's so many times I want to give people the benefit of the doubt, but reading this shit is just like, God, you're just such a weak-willed, spineless boy. Like, ugh.
I think the last couple of weeks has been about saying that the benefit of the doubt is not enough anymore. That we've spent a lot of time giving people the benefit of the doubt. Now it's time for you to justify that benefit of the doubt because it hasn't been justified before. A lot of things are changing, not just when it comes to sports, but the entire world. It's all kind of melding together, which is why you can't stick to sports. It's all one big thing. It's all one big part of the same ecosystem. So we're all learning. We're all watching. We're all waiting and seeing. So thank you to all the listeners who continue to listen to this show and continue to support this show. SportsOddsAndEnds.com. If you want links to all the stories that we talked about, hit us up on Twitter. I'm at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. Twitch.tv/KingKaz if you want to watch Kaz playing different video games. DJM is at CallMeDJM. Patreon.com/SportsOddsAndEnds if you want to support the show financially. Thank you to those of you who do. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.